The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the January-February issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to begin on Who's Who. We're going to start with Angel Reese, Chicago Sky forward. Her height is 6'3". She was born May 6, 2002, hometown Baltimore, Maryland. During her rookie season, Reese set a WNBA record with 15 straight double-doubles. She finished the season with averages of 13.6 points and 13.1 rebounds per game. In 2023, Reese led LSU to a national championship and was named the tournament's most outstanding player. Did you know, though, Reese's cousin, Jordan Hawkins, who now plays for the New Orleans Pelicans, was a member of the UConn team that won the men's national title the day after Reese won her championship with LSU. Next, we have Ja'Marr Chase, Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver. His height is 6 feet. His weight is 205 pounds. He was born March 1st, 2000, hometown Harvey, Louisiana. Chase has exceeded 1,000 yards receiving in each of his first four NFL seasons. Through the first 13 games in 2024, he led the league with 1,319 yards and 93 catches. Chase is one of two players, Julio Jones is the other, to have 250 yards receiving in more than one game. Did you know the record for receiving yard by a rookie was set in 2023 by Puka Nacua of the Chargers, 1,486, who surpassed Bill Gorman, 1,473, for the Houston Oilers in 1960. And finally, we have Mason Miller, athletics pitcher. His height is 6'5". His weight is 200 pounds. He was born August 24, 1998, hometown, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. As a rookie in 2024, Miller made the American League All-Star team. He struck out 104 batters in 65 innings and had an ERA of 2.49. Miller, who was converted from a starter to a reliever in 2023, also made history for throwing the last pitch in the Athletic last game in Oakland. Did you know, though? The A's will play next season in Sacramento before ultimately moving to Las Vegas. In the past, the franchise has called Philadelphia and Kansas City home. What if you were the great Bambino? You're hungry. You're having hot dogs for dinner. Delicious hot dogs. You eat a few more than you should, prompting your dad to tell you about how one-time legendary slugger Babe Ruth ate a dozen Franks and got so sick people thought he was dying. Cool story, Dad, you say, as you are about to lapse into a food coma. I'm going to go lie down on the couch. Don't fall asleep, he tells you. Eating that much food before going to sleep can give you weird dreams. Sure, you say. You start to say more, but you can barely keep your eyes open. When you wake up, you're in a flannel New York Yankees uniform, and you're a lot bigger than you remember. You've apparently been dozing in baseball clubhouse. On a nearby table is a Chicago newspaper. The big story is about Game 3 of the 1932 World Series between the Yankees and the Cubs. The article also goes on to say that Franklin D. Roosevelt, who is running for president, will be at the game. You remember from history class that he would be elected four times, beginning in 1932. A fellow player comes by and says, "You ready, babe?" It's then that you catch a look in the mirror. You really are Babe Ruth. The fans are merciless at one point, even throwing fruit at you. You're somehow able to swing the mighty bat you're handed and hit a home run your first time at bat. Next time up, Cubs pitcher Charlie Root throws two strikes past you, and the heckling from the players and fans intensifies. You think about making a gesture to show them up, but it's not exactly great sportsmanship. What do you do? A. Point to the outfield fence or focus on the at-bat. Well, let's go with A. You point to the fence. You've had enough of the Cubs and their produce-heaving fans. You raise your hand and point. Years later, people will debate your intention. Were you pointing at Root? The dugout? Were you even pointing at all? But you know the truth. You're pointing at the flagpole near the center field scoreboard, and you're telling Root where his next pitch is going. Sure enough, he serves up a curveball, and you pounce on it. The adrenaline from the situation gives you a boost. You launch the ball well past the flagpole. It lands some 490 feet from home plate. Even the Chicago series scribes are in awe of it. George Herman Ruth always enjoys a homer under any circumstances, writes the Chicago Tribune. But it's doubtless he ever socked one that gave him the satisfaction that accompanied the second one yesterday. The clout breaks a 4-4 tie, and the Yankees go on to win the game and sweep the series. Let's go to decision number two. The razzing you're receiving from the crowd and the Cubs bench is intense, but you decide to put it out of your mind. But it's not that easy. You can't help but be a little distracted, and when Root throws a curveball, you can only hit a weak pop-up that heads towards the stands in foul territory, which happens to be where Roosevelt was sitting. As the Cubs' first baseman settles under the ball, the presidential candidate tried to catch it and knocked it away from the Chicago player. That gives you another chance, and it takes the ire of the Cubs fans off of you and places it in on Roosevelt. With your do-over, you hit a single to prolong the inning, and the next batter, Lou Gehrig, belts a go-ahead home run. Not only are Cubs fans livid, but so are baseball fans in general. They're tired of the Yankees winning, and now a meddling politician has handed them a victory. Roosevelt is undaunted with hate mail, and a month later on Election Day, he is routed in the polls by his opponent. Let's go to decision number three. Decision number three. The ensuing winter is eventful. After FDR loses the election, the country plunges further into the Great Depression. We're also getting older, and with people struggling to make ends meet, the team tells you you're probably going to have to take a pay cut. Still, you return for the 1933 season with higher expectations. Things are going pretty well early in the year. One afternoon in Detroit, you smack a couple of homers in the first game of a doubleheader. Between games, you find a clubhouse attendant and give the kid some money to go get you a snack. He asks what you'd like to eat, but you don't hear him. So the kid returned with two options, a plate full of hot dogs and some root beer, or a healthy green salad and some mineral water. Do you eat the Franks or the greens? Eat Franks, F. Greens. Decision number two. The ensuing winter is uneventful. Roosevelt Handley wins the election and vowed to do anything he can to pull the country out of the Great Depression. You return for the 1933 season with high expectations. Things are going pretty well early in the year. One afternoon in Detroit, you smack a couple of homers in the first game of a doubleheader. Between games, you find a clubhouse attendant and give the kid some money to go out and get you a snack. He asks what you'd like to eat, but you don't hear him. So the kid returned with two options, a plate full of hot dogs and some root beer, or a healthy green salad and some mineral water. Which do you choose? C, hot dogs, or D, salads? Hot dogs. All right, see. You take one look at the salad and shove it to the side. Then you try a hot dog. These frankfurters are positively scrumptious, you bellow. Whatever it is, that delicious sauce on them. The clubby tells you you're eating a Detroit Coney dog, which is topped with onions, mustard, and spicy chili. After devouring the six he brought, you send him out for another half dozen, all washed down with bottle after bottle of root beer. Then it hit you. Maybe a dozen conies was too many, and all that chili? Yeah. You have a pain in your chest so bad that your manager puts you in a cab and sends you to the hospital. Word gets out that you've had a heart attack and are in bad shape. The doctors ultimately tell you it's only heartburn and it will clear up, but they also remind you that you're 38 and should be taking better care of yourself. But the health scare reminds fans what it is that they love about you. Your larger-than-life qualities, including not just your personality, but also your appetite. 2 years later, you realize it's time to retire, and you go out a beloved hero. When the Baseball Hall of Fame opens in 1939, you are one of the first five inductees, cementing your legacy. Salads. D decision. As much as you love hot dogs, you're not getting any younger or any slimmer. You decide to try the salad. It's not the most delicious thing you've ever eaten, but it fills you up and you feel revitalized. After the game, you have another large bowl of greens, and another. In time, you slim down and feel stronger than ever. So strong, in fact, that you decide you have the endurance to resume pitching, something you gave up early in your career. While you lose some natural power with your age, your improved physique, coupled with not having to play every day as a hitter, prolongs your career. You play well into your 40s, and by the time you retire, you're not only considered the greatest slugger the game has ever seen, but also one of the top pitchers. When you're inducted into the Hall of Fame, you're given two plaques, one for Babe Ruth the hitter, and the other for Babe Ruth the pitcher. Go to scenario G. E, the Franks. You take one look at the plate of hot dogs slathered in mustard and you know two things. One, they're going to be delicious. Two, it's not enough food. So you send the clubby back out to get even more hot dogs as well as a couple of steaks. As you're about to dig in, a reporter and photographer from Life magazine enter the clubhouse. The photo and story become huge news. People are appalled that while the United States is struggling to get out of the Great Depression, you're spending piles of money on high-end beef and junk food. Not only are you now known as the guy who ended FDR's political career, but you're a glutton as well. You retire 2 years later and the greatest hitter the game has ever seen, but one whose reputation will remain forever tarnished. What about the greens? F. You already had a pretty big breakfast, so you decide to give the salad a try. It's not your favorite. What I wouldn't give for some buttermilk dressing, you bellow. But it's not terrible, and you feel pretty good. Just then, a reporter and a photographer from Life magazine come into the clubhouse. They snap a photo of you and your simple greens, and it goes viral, or as much as something to a print magazine can go viral in 1933. Fans can't stop talking about how responsible you've become. First, you didn't lower yourself to the level of the taunting fans in Chicago, and now you're eating a simple salad. Pretty soon, you're being held up as an example of the kind of strong moral role model America could use in the White House. With the Great Depression still ongoing, you decide to retire in 1935 and throw your hat in the ring for the next year's presidential election. Before you know it, you're in Washington, D.C., reciting the presidential oath of office. I, George Herman Ruth, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute. Let's go to scenario G. Someone is shaking you. It's your dad. It takes a minute for you to realize where you are. You slept all night on the couch. You're bleary-eyed and the mustard around the corners of your mouth has become really crusty. Sleep well? Dad asks. You mutter. I thought so, he says. So what do you think Mom and I should make for dinner tonight? More hot dogs? The two of you chuckle. Then you turn a little serious. I don't know. I've heard good things about salad. Steady Freddy. Throughout the most trying season of his career, first baseman Freddie Freeman was able to stay focused and fight through pain to lead the Dodgers to a dramatic World Series victory. In the 120 years since the first World Series, no game in the Fall Classic had ever ended on a grand slam. And then Freddie Freeman came along. In the 10th inning of Game 1 in October, Freeman's Dodgers trailed the Yankees 3-2. Freeman was due to bat in the 6th inning, so he just rooted for his teammates to start a rally, never thinking the game would end up in his hands. But it did. Los Angeles loaded the bases with two outs, and Freeman promptly drove a fastball into the right field seats. The slam propelled Los Angeles to a win in the World Series, and Freeman was named the MVP, marking a happy end to what was easily the most difficult season the 15-year vet had ever had to endure. But it was a year that ultimately ended on a high, not just because of the hardware Freeman racked up. For the 8th time in his career, he was chosen to play in the Midsummer Classic. He took his whole family, wife Chelsea and his 3 sons, 8-year-old Charlie and 3-year-olds Brandon and Max, to the All-Star Game in Arlington, Texas. The family members all became sick with the flu-like symptoms, but by the time they got back home, everyone seemed better. Then Max woke up with a limp. With a couple of days, he wasn't eating or drinking. Freddie was in Houston with the Dodgers when he got a call from Chelsea that Max would have to go to the hospital. Freddie rushed to the airport and flew home. "I was just bawling, crying," he says. Doctors ran test after test before they finally were able to correctly diagnose Max's illness. After more than a week in the hospital, he was finally clear to go home. Freeman missed 8 games, which is one more than in the past 4 seasons combined. He was blown away by the support his family received from the baseball community. "One time, I'm sitting in the hospital," Freeman said, "and the whole Brewers coaching staff sent a video about how they're thinking about us. Angels outfielder Mike Trout, who was on the injured list, offered to help in any way. 'Let me do something,' Trout told him. 'Can I at least bring you donuts?' 'Mike,' Freeman replied, laughing, 'do you think I'm putting donuts in my body right now?'" On August 5th, Freeman returned to lineup, the fans at Dodger Stadium giving a standing ovation. "Honestly, the baseball community and family that we have is special," Freeman says. "You don't know when you're going to need the support system, but it surely shows itself." Just as things were getting better with Max, Freeman developed health problems of his own. Lots of them. In mid-August, he broke his right middle finger fielding a ground ball. Over the next 6 games, he went 3-for-23. "I don't remember what happened after, Max," says Freeman. "I came back and I was grinding, but I was just there physically. Mentally, I wasn't really there." 1 month later, on September 26th, Freeman suffered a bone bruise and a sprain to his right ankle on an awkward play at first base. 9 days later, he was in the batting cage on the eve of the National League Division Series against San Diego. He felt a minor pain in his rib cage but kept swinging. He took a cut and was hit with a wave of pain so bad it knocked him to his knees. He was told he had basically broken his rib. Freeman had one question: "Can I play with it?" Doctors told him they would do everything they could to dent the pain. He kept the injury secret outside the clubhouse. People were asking, "Is he going to play or is he not going to play?" Freeman says, "It was all about my ankle, but no one knew about my rib. I was trying to keep that quiet because I didn't want the Padres to know. So we just tried to mask it, and we did a pretty good job." Freeman battled through the pain as L.A. beat the Padres and then the Mets to advance to the World Series, which set the stage for his heroics. Freeman normally doesn't like scouting reports or using video to prepare. But as he prepared for his crucial at-bat, he asked for an iPad and studied how New York pitcher Nestor Cortez pitched to Dodgers slugger Shohei Ohtani, who, like Freeman, is a tall lefty. He devised a strategy: look for an inside fastball. He stepped to the batter's box, and then, Freeman says, it turned out that he threw it right where I was looking. He launched the pitch into the seats. It was the 3rd straight World Series game in which he homered, and he ultimately ran that streak to 6 with homers in games 2, 3, and 4. Freeman didn't watch a replay of the Grand Slam until well after the series was over. After I hit it, we had a game the next day, so it's hard to take it all in, he says. But then you see all the reactions. When I saw all these people in their homes, jumping up and down, running around their houses, it really is amazing. What's so cool about sports is that it can do this to people and bring so much joy and happiness. I didn't really understand, but now I see it is amazing. I was able to impact people in such a positive way. As for Max, he's doing much better, and his dad expects him to look like a typical 4-year-old by the time spring training rolls around. Everything's going to be okay in 2025, hopefully, Freeman says. If not, and that's going to happen in our lifetime, you just handle the speed bumps, make sure that car makes it over and lands softly, and then you just keep going. Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. The pair of highly touted freshmen are making New Jersey a destination for scouts as they try to rejuvenate their program. Piscataway, New Jersey is the home of Rutgers. It's always been the kind of place that NBA scouts would visit to check out players on teams facing the Scarlet Knights, but this season is the center of attention for NBA talent evaluators planning for the 2025 draft for a different reason. Rutgers has two potential top five picks, Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. To all, Piscataway, a surprising locale for future elite NBA talent, would be an understatement. Since 1995, Rutgers has finished above 500 in league play just twice. The school's last first rounder was picked a few weeks before Bailey was born in 2006. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity for the Scarlet Knights to change the perception of their program forever, and maybe even reshape how top recruits think about what they should value in a college home. Rutgers coach Steve Peichel has been in college coaching for 32 years, but the scene when Bailey committed to the Scarlet Knights in January 2023 was like any he'd experienced before. After a gritty overtime victory over the Ohio State, Bailey, who was visiting the school as a junior at McEachern High in Powder Springs, Georgia, approached Peichel in the locker room. Bailey's star was rising, and he didn't intend to commit to Rutgers on his visit. But he was taken in by the atmosphere that he approached Peichel and gave him the good news. "He's coming!" people yelled out, as the coach and player were mobbed in what looked like a championship celebration. Peichel says he's never received a commitment after a game like that. "It was really the perfect place," Bailey says. Getting Bailey on board early was huge because Rutgers had long been in pursuit of another elite prospect in the 2024 class, Harper, a New Jersey native. The versatile guard had been around the program since middle school, watching his brother Ron Harper Jr. develop into a two-time All-Big Ten performer. Even as stalwart programs like Duke and Kansas were pushing to land him, Harper felt Rutgers was even more appealing when Bailey committed. "I just wanted to change the narrative that every kid that is from New Jersey leaves Jersey," Harper says. "Every year we have 2, 3, 5, and 4-star players, but they never come here." Bailey took recruiting matters into his own hands, regularly calling Harper. The two even teamed up on the AAU circuit for a weekend in April 2023. Harper committed to Rutgers 8 months later. "Go where you're wanted, not where you want to go. That's what my mom always told me," Harper says. Fast friends. When Bailey and Harper got to campus, it became clear that they would form a strong bond. They finish each other's sentences, bicker about when they first officially met, and even lend each other sneakers for a photo shoot at Rutgers College Avenue gym. "We're basically like family," Harper says. The 6'10 Bailey oozes potential, having just turned 18 in August and possessing the type of lanky frame and explosive game that resembles a young Kevin Durant. He explodes effortlessly off the floor for dunks, has the length to shoot over defenses, and is a gifted passer. Harper is also 18 and physically blends in more with a roster that's otherwise littered with 22- and 23-year-olds. He looks like a modern NBA lead guard built in a lab, a chiseled 215 pounds at 6'6", with elite court vision and the ability to get to the rim. The two freshmen live in apartments no more than a stone's throw from the team's state-of-the-art practice facility. They have 24/7 access to a gym at the practice facility and take full advantage, working out at all hours. It's a basketball lover's paradise. And make no mistake, Bailey and Harper are basketball lovers. If we can't sleep, we're in the gym, Bailey says. You get bored, go to the gym, Harper says. You get mad, go to the gym, Bailey says. Bailey and Harper may have grown up more than 800 miles from one another, but their makeups are eerily similar. Each grew up in deep basketball families. Harper's father, Ron, was NBA championships with the Bulls next to Michael Jordan and the Lakers next to Kobe Bryant. Harper's mother, Maria, played in Division I and coached him from second grade on, and his brother is already a legend at Rutgers and is now playing in the NBA G League. Bailey's mother, Ramika McGee, father, Richard Bailey, and aunt, Venus Lacey, all played Division I basketball. Lacey won a gold medal for Team USA at the 1996 Olympics. Both kids possess what Pico calls old-school values, the work ethic and loyalty that keeps them on the path to Rutgers, even when bigger programs started calling. Both are also embracing the challenge of lifting a college hoops, also ran into the sport's top tier. If you get all the hype and pressure, you're doing something right, Harper says. You'd rather have it than not have it, because if you don't have it, you're chasing it. I think for us, even though we've got it, we're still chasing it and trying to do even more. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.